Hey, Renter Retires, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode, joined as usual by Zach Leemaster, the founder and CEO of Renter Retirement. And we are pleased to be joined today by Lindsay Lovell. She is the founder of G6 Capital and Wonderlust Stays. Lindsay, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Really excited to be here with both of you guys.
Yeah, you have a very impressive startup story. And we always like to go to people's beginnings. I mean, you're one of those people who ramped up quick. So tell us a little bit about your start and how you proceeded to kind of ramp up your portfolio.
Thank you, Adam. Yeah, so stumbled upon it. Wasn't something that I had ever planned in my head to go out and build a portfolio of single family homes. But like a lot of people probably listening to this, I had, you know, bought hook, line, and sinker that American dream that if I work hard, I got the good grades, I got the dream job, high paying W-2, I was going to be living the dream and having a life that was, you know, everything we always wanted. And I had done all that. I'd even gone back and got my MBA and thought maybe just getting a little bit higher paid job, and was still just running in the rat race, and had this moment where I was looking at my wealth front and trying to plan out, okay, maybe if I continue to work and save at this rate, I will be able to retire at 63 and a half. And as long as I don't live past 96, I'm going to be good. And I was like, that sounds pretty miserable, right? There has to be something else to do. And ironically, at that time is when the pandemic hit. I was very blessed to be still employed, but my job was to go calling on different cancer and medical centers. And so it came to a screeching halt until they could figure out how to pivot us virtually. And so my husband said, you need to figure something else to do with your time. I like to do things. I like to be productive. And introduced me to a colleague of his that he's like, oh, Jason owns a couple hundred doors in Kansas City, Missouri. And I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. More interesting than the stock market. And Jason sent me this spreadsheet that had all these acronyms, COC, ROI, seemed really intimidating, and told me to go listen to Bigger Pockets. And I did. And, you know, first started sounding like Mandarin, right? What's this B with a million R's after it? And, you know, wholesale and all of these things. And the more I started listening to it, I thought, you know, these are people just like me that have the same goals that are trying to accomplish something that it's not rocket science. And so I started to reach out to the community. I found a great mentor through just going online and reaching out to people. That's the beautiful thing. People want to pay it forward. And he introduced me to a small market in the middle of Kansas, right outside of Kansas City, Missouri. Bought my first deal from a wholesaler, $25,000 cash. Put $20,000 rehab into it. It appraised for 62, and I was on my way. I had the bug.
Nice. So how were you? Now you don't live. Do you live right there?
How did
you do that from before? Because one of the things, you know, buying like turnkey real estate, you know, that's already done. What gave you the confidence to put $20,000 of rehab into a property in a market that you don't live in?
Yeah, and that's a great question. So I live in San Francisco, which I don't have to say is one of the most expensive, ridiculous markets. And so clearly investing for cash flow was not an option there. And so I immediately kind of off the bat was just forced into going the long distance. And I think, and what I've learned and what I've started to teach and use over and over again is a system of just making sure that you have a really strong, reliable team on the ground, and you can go ahead and you can invest in any market as long as those key players are there and you feel confident in them. You know, I think what was important for me is I sat down and I said, okay, you know, if we were to lose everything, you know, this $25,000 plus however much into the rehab we are, if things go, you know, upside down, can I still sleep at night? And that's kind of how we landed on a number of 25,000 plus, you know, another 20,000 into the rehab. It would hurt, but we weren't going to, you know, suddenly be missing payments on other aspects of our life. And I think that was a big thing that also allowed me to feel comfortable doing that was, you know, I set my risk tolerance in terms of financial, and I felt very strong having the right mentor with who I had on the ground as team members.
So Lindsay, this is, and thank you for sharing that. That was some great information. You know, we're no strangers to investing out of state. When I tell my story, I always make it a point to mention to people that, you know, when I learned how to successfully invest in other markets, not just my local market, That was kind of a pivotal moment for us because there's the real estate market in the U.S. is a very diverse landscape, and there's a lot of different opportunities out there. I mean, some people like yourself living in San Francisco, it's so expensive. There's such a high barrier of entry to buy property that, sure, you hope will appreciate over time, but may not, or may fluctuate. But it takes a ton of money to not even probably be positive cash flow, and you don't want to invest just for appreciation, right? And that's I think a lot of our listeners find themselves living in expensive areas, or looking to invest in areas where they can see even, you know, some appreciation upside plus cash flow, plus a lower barrier of entry. Like, we really like the Southeast. We like Missouri. We're no strangers to investing in Missouri. I've been investing in Missouri for over a decade now. We like probably some of the similar areas. We like investing in areas like Independence, Raytown, Blue Springs, kind of those suburbs around the city. They're still commutable to the city and you don't get the same type of crime. Let me just back up and ask you and pick your brain on this. So your first property, you jumped in and you did a BRRRR, which is where you buy a house, you rehab it. I don't know. Did you refinance it and keep it as a rental and pull some money?
Sure
back
did.
Out?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You said it appraised for 65. So that's great. You had that forced equity. Let's talk about, how you, was it, well, let me ask this first. Is this your first investment property? Was this Kansas City one?
Correct. And it was actually St. Joseph, Missouri, to your point, just outside of the Kansas City. And it was my first investment property. Mm-hmm.
And this was, and you said in during the pandemic, so 2020, 2021-ish, right? Is that when?
July of 2020.
Okay, cool. So just...
I mean, everybody felt so good about the market then.
Right?
No, but if we look back at it too, and, you know, Kansas City is in a crazy appreciation market, but I mean, look at what happened across the nation. For good for you for running into the fire.
Yep.
When everyone else was running away from it, right? And then you probably have had good appreciation on that property just over the two years, in addition to the forced appreciation you put into it. How did you, a lot of people get themselves into trouble investing out of state, especially trying to do it themselves, in particular, investing in areas that they're unfamiliar with, buying in low-income areas, having contractors that steal from them, dealing with, if you're not self-managing, property managers that steal from them. Like, the list goes on and on and on and on. And in most cases, we found a lot of people get themselves into trouble doing this from a distance, especially. So it sounds like this was a success on your first one. Congratulations for that. How did you, let's talk about the mindset. Like, you know, how did you set yourself up for success in investing in this out-of-state market, buying an undervalued property and rehabbing it versus falling into one of the many common pitfalls people find themselves in?
Yeah. So, you know, full transparency, I'm not going to say that I haven't had my hiccups along the way. I think I got very lucky having found a great mentor that introduced me to some reliable people for the first one. And thank goodness, you know, I had a great experience on that first one, and kind of some of the learning lessons came further on in other experiences. And I think, you know, the biggest thing that I've learned since then, to your point, is we have so much power and knowledge at our fingertips with the internet and the communities that are out there, that it takes a little time and effort to set it up, but making sure that you always have those checks and balances, right? So somebody that is checking on the contractor, right? Somebody that is checking in on the property management. If for some reason you have a concern, I haven't had that issue, but I think typically it's with the contractor. Whether you're finding somebody who's a handyman, somebody else that you know. We've actually, since we manage Airbnbs, have had a lot of luck of finding our contacts on the ground that are also handy and can be sort of our checks and balance through turnover B&B. So people that clean Airbnbs tend to kind of be in the market and understand real estate and are great sort of resources to help build your team. But for me, what I've found and what I just stumbled upon in that first one and have since learned to replicate is finding that rockstar real estate agent. Finding an agent that knows the market, is investor savvy, and willing to be a good partner. And there's, you know, lots of ways you can interview, and I have formulas and systems for that. But that's been my nucleus. If I can't find a great real estate agent that understands wholesaling, willing to work with me on wholesale, there's been markets that I thought were really exciting, but I just haven't gone into because I couldn't find that key player.
Yeah, that's a good starting point. I think I would agree with you on that, because, and there's, and that would probably be the most also the most difficult person or one of the most difficult because there's no shortage of agents or brokers out there. The market is absolutely flooded with them, and vast majority of them are not really like investment savvy. And so I think that's the key person, but they should be able to, especially if they should be local first, like, you know, they should be able to recommend teams to you, you know, oh, I've used this, especially if they're an investor themselves, right? They get it. So I've used this property management team. I've used this contractor. Oh, here's an insurance recommendation. You need a lender. I mean, kind of all the same things that we try to do for our clients, but that is a key first step. So thank you for that. What was after that first one? That was a success. And what happened next?
Yeah. So I did another wholesale. And this was one where, you know, I had some learning lessons. The first one had been pretty smooth, bought it from a different wholesaler, and, you know, realized that sometimes the wholesaler, I guess I didn't quite have quite a total understanding of what they did and where they were in the process, and that, you know, you really are getting the house as it is. So I got this duplex that was Section 8, and it had a garage full of junk, and was like, you know what, why wasn't this moved out, you know, when the previous tenants moved out? And, you know, learning lessons of there's a difference between buying from a wholesaler and what you get and things you need to be prepared for versus buying from an agent and on market, or, you know, more of a pocket listing. Bought the duplex, got into it a little bit more than I had wanted to, but was still able to do a BRRRR. Again, this was in St. Joseph, Missouri. And what was, to your point earlier, you know, I had started off at that very low income point. And I realized pretty quickly, especially with this duplex, you're going to have a certain level of tenants and need a certain level of hands-on management by the property management. And so this was a little bit higher price point and gave me a better idea of, you know, okay, we know where we're at. We're comfortable. Here's cash flow that we can get. We can afford this. It's not feeling as risky. And was kind of that middle step before we started going to, you know, buying more nicer single family homes, more into those nicer suburbs that you mentioned. So this was probably my first and only non-successful BRRRR, which again was a great learning lesson. And my first foray into Section 8.
Did you say that not every BRRRR is successful?
You know, and everybody has their definition of success, right? I think as long as you get certain amount of money back out that you can rinse and repeat, it's great, right? May not be a home run, but yes. And I think that's the problem, is people get so fixated on finding that perfect BRRRR that they never pull the trigger and take action.
Yeah. I mean, newsflash here, everyone, like, not every single real estate purchase you buy, whether you're trying to rehab it or not, which has a lot of variables, like, you know, you'll lose money in real estate. It happens, right? But that's why you're not trying to put all your eggs in one basket. And, you know, it's a learning process over time. Every time you lose money, you learn a lesson and you try to apply that to being a better investor, and you stay consistent to keep growing. That's how you build wealth in real estate. Would you agree with that, Lindsay?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things was, you know, coming from Silicon Valley, fail fast, right? Don't be afraid to try something and try it. And sometimes I always think, you know, you got to give it at least a second shot, right? Nobody rides a bike perfect on the first time. But if it's not for you, if it's not working, there's so many different aspects of real estate. For me, I tried flipping. I tried it twice. Wasn't my thing, right? Not, I learned, I tried it, and I'm happy and proud to move on. And I'm happy to share, you know, those learning lessons. But I think that people sometimes think if you go into something, you're married to it and you have to stick with it. And that's not the case. You know, it's so flexible and forgiving.
Yeah. So when you say it didn't go well, are you talking about like lost a lot? Are you talking about breaking even? Are you talking about, you know, not pulling out all of your money? Or tell people, and also, you know, you mentioned finding the wholesaler. Was this somebody, a wholesaler you found through an agent, or how were you finding the people you were finding?
Yeah. So, for the first question, when I say the BRRRR was not, I think there's the BRRRR and the flip. So the BRRRR not being successful, I think that would be where you don't pull any money out, right? And then there's the ones where you get some, you know, I think there's kind of a range, you know, kind of like good, great, home run, depending on how much you get back out. For the flips, you know, maybe I'd been spoiled with my previous successes with the BRRRR. So when I say it hadn't been great, I broke even. Maybe, you know, lost a little bit money here and there. But I think the biggest lesson and kind of cost for me was just the stress, and quickly realizing like I don't enjoy learning the different aspects of rehab. I do very cosmetic rehabs, the paint, the floors. That's where my kind of sweet spot and comfort and interest level is. And after that, you have to stay on it. You have to really know. And I got a little lackadaisical, just it didn't turn out probably as good as it could have been for somebody that was more excited about being more involved, I would say. So didn't lose a ton of money, but again, with it being my first one, like I always encourage people, I didn't, you know, go for a, you know, $500,000 house to try and flip. It was, you know, $150,000. To your point about the wholesalers, I found both of these wholesalers, like I mentioned, we're so lucky to have the knowledge and the community at our fingertips through Facebook. So if you ever want to invest in a market, I always recommend joining that Facebook group. There's an investor group for literally just about every city on the map. Go there, and if you just start looking, you can tell who the wholesalers are, who's posting deals, and reach out, ask to get on their mailing list. And that's exactly what I did. Three or four deals later on, I ran across a gentleman who was wholesaling something on Facebook Marketplace in Murray, Kentucky, of all places, and was just scouring there. So there's a lot of different ways, but I think going to social media is probably the most direct way to get in touch with wholesalers.
Yeah, that's great. It's all about being in that network and finding people that are familiar with the market if you're not going to jump into. So if you're not going to invest locally, but for anyone who's unfamiliar, wholesaling are people that, you know, they basically market and they find undervalued properties, distressed properties, distressed property owners. They put that under contract and then they take that contract and basically sell it for an assignment fee or a double closing. They give that contract to someone like Lindsay who's going to buy the house and actually do the rehab on it. They ideally are leaving meat on the bone for you so that you can go and have a potential at coming out on top. The one thing I'll say though, and I did wholesaling for multiple years. That's how I actually started investing in real estate as a side hustle. Actually, buy and hold was what I started with my first house hack duplex. And then I did wholesaling to have additional streams of income to buy more long-term rentals. Certainly was a job, but I would say just be cautious too. And you would probably agree with this, Lindsay, but like, there's a lot of wholesalers out there. A lot of them are brand new and learning, you know, how to evaluate properties and rehab. They're not the one taking the risk on doing the rehab, and they're trying to build in a profit margin for themselves. And so you just be cautious. Like if a wholesaler is giving you a presented deal saying, oh, this rehab is $30,000 and this ARV is $100,000 and I'm selling it to you for, you know, $20,000 and you're going to make all this money, like, probably you should be cautious a little bit about that, especially if you're new into it, because rehabs always go longer, always have extended fee. Like you don't know about you just need to verify all those things before you jump in. Because there's been a lot of people that, you know, bought wholesale deals that it didn't turn out well. I mean, for multiple reasons. What do you think about that?
Oh, 100%. Couldn't have said it better, Zach. You know, and have great friends that wholesale, but I always, you know, say, any wholesale deal, the ARV is going to be, the real ARV is less than what the wholesaler probably is advertising. The rehab's going to be more than what they're saying is, and probably the rent, predicted rent, is going to be less if you're looking to rent it out. And any deal, even if you're working with a great, you know, hard money lenders will underwrite deals and check them out, or real estate agents, but you absolutely should always be running your own numbers. You should never take it from anybody else. And I think you should always run your numbers. I always run my numbers in threes, you know, base case, worst case, home run. And if you can't live with the worst case, you got to ask yourself if that's the right deal. And to your point, yes, you're getting, you know, a discount and hopefully have a chance to force that appreciation. But there are absolutely times that you're buying more than you really realized with a wholesale. And sometimes the wholesalers aren't even there on the ground seeing the house, right? So to your point, take it with a big grain of salt.
Yeah, just do your due diligence. Like also title work is important to know, like the history on the house. You know, I mean, and I've also bought a lot from wholesalers and flipped them too. And it's like, come to find out this house is actually condemned or, you know, had dead bodies in it. Like there's some scary stuff out there. So we could spend all day talking about those stories. And I think just one more point I think that is important, what you mentioned to discuss is like, there's a lot of gurus out there and a lot of people and a lot in the industry that are just like, telling you the way to riches in real estate is to, like, you have to get into flipping, you have to get into wholesaling, you have to, you know, this is how you create financial independence and retire from your job and leave your job, right? And then there's even bigger pockets really presses the Burr strategy, or they did for a long time, and it's like as if that's the golden way to invest in real estate. Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, there's a lot of different ways, and you mentioned this, Lindsay, there's a lot of different ways you can invest in real estate. But one thing is undoubtedly true, and how you build wealth over time, now this takes time, is buying good real estate, good areas, and holding them, right? Just holding rental real estate, leveraging comfortably, maximizing your tax benefits, and holding on to rental real estate. Everything else, that's a job. I mean, make no mistake about it. And it could be an 80-hour work week job, to your point, not flipping. You know, that there's so many people we talk to that's like, oh, I hate real estate. Well, why do you hate it? Like, well, I tried to, you know, I went through this course, I tried to flip this house and it was a disaster, and I was just pulled my hair out. It's too much stress. I hate real estate. Well, okay, but that's one facet of real estate. You know, what about, mm-hmm. did you know that you can invest and not have to do that, you know, long term, right?
So yeah.
I mean, anyways, I just want to, like, there's nothing wrong with just not, you know, buying. It's not the super sexy way probably to invest in real estate, but you certainly can build wealth over time just investing in good areas, whether you're doing it yourself and building your own team or going turnkey, whatever the case is. You know, I think that's important. You don't, a lot of people feel like they have to go through that pain and agony of flipping. And some people are very successful, but it is another job, and there's certainly a lot of risk associated with that. I mean, what are your thoughts, Lindsay?
No, I couldn't agree more, you know, and lately, talking about, you know, running into the fire when everybody was telling me I was crazy to get started doing this during the pandemic. And I look back and I'm like, if I had taken that advice, I wouldn't be here right now. You know, everybody kept saying, wait, there's going to be a tidal wave. There's going to be a tidal wave. And I think we're seeing that right now, too. Everybody was waiting for the markets and the price to come crashing down, and they haven't. And I think we're going to see another big rush and crazy bidding wars coming up once the rates go down. To your point, there's so many different ways. And because of everybody holding off right now and listening, we've been able to get some great deals on market turnkey, right? Just because the rates aren't where maybe we'd like them. I always say it's a math equation. And I don't care if that variable that is the interest rate is 16% or it's 2%. If what comes after the equal sign fits my buy box, that's great. Right. There's always going to be a variable that we don't love, whether it's the prices, the interest rates, the terms, but you got to work with the market. And there's always ways to find deals. And right now, because everybody's, you know, sort of sitting back, we haven't had to buy anything wholesale. It's great. Turnkey's been wonderful for us.
Yeah. I love that you said about the math equation. I tell people that all the time, is real estate's just one big math equation. And when it comes down to it, you mentioned kind of the, you know, pulling money out. You mentioned hard money loans before. You've invested with a variety of financing options, creative financing, hard money, Burr money. Even it sounds like, based on what I was reading, your self-directed IRA. Can you talk about kind of the different ways you finance and kind of how you've decided to go those ways, the difference in them?
Yeah. So I think we're all familiar, you know, with the conventional, and we started off with that. On that note, I think one of the biggest lessons that I learned is that, you know, we think of Wells Fargo and all that, and they're so regulated by Fannie and Freddie, but it had never occurred to me that local credit unions and local banks can make their own rules and regulations. And so I have quickly built a relationship, and I highly recommend any market you're going into, start calling every credit union, every bank, seeing how they lend, build those relationships, because they can really work with you. And we found somebody that lends in all 50 states, to the point that as long as it appraises, we close. None of the underwriting shenanigans and hoops, and can get sort of different unique terms. And so I think that's where we've gone, you know, the most regularly. We've also done hard money lending, in the sense of if we came across a deal and didn't have the cash on hand, hard money lending is a great bridge, in my opinion. Right. For a short term, if you have a way to get out of it quickly, maybe you can't get your conventional financing quick enough to close the deal, and you're going to lose it, or you need it for the down payment, and it makes sense because you're going to put the conventional lending on the rest of it. And you often hear these gurus, you know, talking about, I didn't use any of my own money. That's often, you know, what the part they're not saying is they're going out and borrowing it Hard money, if anybody's not familiar, tends to be a lot more expensive. They often aren't, though, the benefit. They're not looking at your credit score necessarily as much. Sometimes they're doing, like I mentioned before, they'll underwrite the deals. They're more interested in what the deal's going to look like, cash and money-wise versus a typical conventional loan, wanting your bank statements for the past 3 months, all of those things that they're often looking at. But you pay more. And I will also, as a word of advice, there's often a lot more hidden fees. So I would just say, you know, make sure that beyond the origination fee and all that, that you're looking at that. So hard money lending. And then I think another really powerful tool is using a self-directed 401k. So, you know, one of those things that I bought into early was you put money in a 401k and you can only put it with Charles Schwab or one of those in a mutual fund. And that's the only way that that money can be used. And that's actually not how the government structured it. You can use it in many other ways as long as you have it structured in the right type of bank account and follow the rules. And so you can use it for Bitcoin, real estate, hard money lending, which I think is a way that we often forget is a great way to make money in real estate without taking on that risk and that second job. And I think a lot of people probably can start off and don't realize they have those funds that they can tap into with money that you've already had from a previous employer. So that's another really powerful way. And I love to do hard money lending with that. I think, you know, you can write a check, get 12% return, guarantee it with a property. And it's probably one of the easiest, quickest ways in real estate to get started as well.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you said guaranteeing it with a property, right? Not just arbitrarily giving money to someone, having it actually secured against an asset is really important. When Lindsay, we could probably pick your brain all day, but just I want to just make sure the audience understands like what you accomplished. So let me real quick, just to make sure we have the right date. Was it 2021, July 2021 that you got the 2020?
2020. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're here 3.5 years later from when you bought your first, that was your first forte into real estate, accurate?
Correct.
Okay. And so here we are 3.5 years later. You took the plunge, you ran into the fire when everyone else was naysayers and thought the sky was falling. You've had some hiccups along the way with different rentals, surprise, you know, everyone does. But now you have a large portfolio of, I think, close to like 60 doors, many short-term rentals. You have multiple businesses. I just want to publicly commend you a little bit for like, that's a short period of time to accomplish a lot. And it's because, yes, you're an entrepreneur, you have that spirit, but it's mainly because you got started and you didn't stop, right? And what I've also heard from you is you maximized all these different resources when everyone runs out of money, right? Adam, tired of me saying that. That's the most limited resource, but it is. And so what do you do when you're out of money, right? You can raise capital, you can tap into your retirement vehicle and invest through that. You can find creative ways to bring in partners. You can start a business. And you started multiple businesses around real estate. You have the Millionaires March. I want to talk about that, helping women succeed, G6 Capital. You want real estate, helping manage vacation rentals and running vacation rentals. So, I mean, that is just really cool. I love hearing stories like this where, and again, maybe real estate for you is just buying one or two rentals every single year and being that part of your portfolio. That's certainly fine, right? That's great. Mm-hmm. Real estate fits whatever needs you have. It's whatever your buy box is. But you know, in a short period of time, not a lifetime retire, you know, trying to buy into the 401k plan and then waiting until you're hopefully healthy enough to retire later in life and live below your means at that point in time. And hopefully inflation hasn't already killed away most of your earnings and the market is timed appropriately and blah, blah, blah. But within a short period of time, not a lifetime, you're able to create a successful portfolio, create financial independence, start other business and passions. So I just think that's really cool and hopefully inspiring to a lot of people that are kind of like, I don't know if I want to get into real estate. You got to start somewhere, guys. And, you know, the sky is the limit. You just don't know what the future looks like until you get started. But just in closing, as we wrap up, I do want to talk about the Millionaires March and like how, you know, that's a passion project, of course, as a business, I'm sure. But what are you doing there?
Yeah. So exactly to your point, I think sometimes we just aren't taught, you know, I have an MBA, I was valedictorian straight A student, but I was never taught to take steps like this with my money, right? Always was taught that it was risky. And I think too, that also maybe the nature of women sometimes a little bit more in general, and I have several friends that are single moms and their priority is taking care of kids, and they don't always have a ton of time, right, to go out and learn real estate. Or, you know, if you want to do it passively and get involved in a syndication, you know, most buy-ins are, you know, $100,000, $250,000. You don't have that, you know, getting started. And so for me, Millionaires March started hand in hand with G6 Capital, which was our syndication company, where we were just giving an opportunity for people to get in on owning a part of an Airbnb and short-term rentals for as little as, you know, $5,000, $10,000 to get into the syndication fund without it being just something that really kind of was for those who were in the know and already probably had a lot of money. And through that, I started having just a lot of women and friends reaching out and saying, hey, I want to learn how to do this myself, you know, or even just how to be able to tell if a syndication beyond yours, you know, I know you, I trust you, but how can I evaluate and figure out if it is a good, safe investment? And so the Millionaires March started off as me just saying, you know, I love teaching, I love people. And so I'm going to put this service out there for whoever wants it. Ironically, I had started really with the intention of connecting with other females. And to date, my students are 50-50 male and female. So it's been great. So that is my passion project that I do right now, just helping people. You know, my specialty is, like I've mentioned, I've done a bunch of different things, but really those looking to get started or expand their single family home. I'm happy to chat short-term rentals with people and coach on that as well. But really single families, small multis is where that passion project is. And you know, I'm not a genius. I'm not a rocket scientist. You know, it's just, you know, anybody can do it. If you just, I think the biggest two thing about the coaching that I found is also having that accountability partner. That's half of my job is just, like you said, keeping people moving forward.
We talked a little bit about kind of you getting started whenever people were concerned about long-term rentals. You also have, you know, are currently having some short-term rentals and managing those. Tell us a little bit, what have you seen in the short-term rental market recently? Is this something that people have kind of seen better returns right now? Returns about average, returns gotten worse? And what's the short-term rental market looking like?
Yeah. You know, full transparency. You know, I sort of hesitated and said I'll coach on the short-term rentals, but it's not an area that I'm buying in myself. So I'm always hesitant to, you know, I'll always be full transparency. I think there are a lot of regulations. We've seen a lot of towns that we are in change overnight, which can be devastating depending on, you know, your situation. I think too, it for better or worse, right, was one of the new hottest things and everybody jumped in. So you see a lot of markets that are saturated. So I just strongly encourage anybody thinking about going into it to really make sure that you run your numbers, do competitive research. I think too, especially if you're going into a, you know, hot, sexy market, those that are going to succeed are going to be those that, you know, have the big pink house with a pool and, you know, really stand out and, you know, or have some sort of theme that makes you stand out amongst the other 50 or 60, you know, renting for the same price down the block. So I think those that have really narrowed it in and found their niche are probably having, you know, great returns. And I think certain markets that we're in, we're starting to see an uptake, thank goodness. But I think it's definitely something that it's not as easy as it once was to come in and make a lot of money.
All right. Well, fantastic. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Again, the website, if you want to check her out, is themillionairesmarch.com. That's themillionairesmarch.com. Don't forget to check us out at renttoretirement.com. If you want to see some of the turnkey real estate we have available, that's at renttoretirement.com. You can schedule a call with us. Check out our academy that'll teach you how to, you know, properly get started in real estate and continue your journey there. And also, if you have any questions for Zach and myself to answer in future episodes, email them to podcasts@renttoretirement.com. That's podcasts@renttoretirement.com. Really appreciate the time you spent educating yourselves today. We'll talk to you on the next episode.